This episode contains graphic descriptions of crime scenes, which may be disturbing to some listeners.
Today's story takes us back to 1980, when a young mother is brutally murdered in her own home. The details of how she's killed and what happened inside her apartment afterward are unusual. The crime scene, staged. The motive, unclear. Who killed Sheila Shepherd?
This is APB Cold Case. Here's your host, former police chief Mark Spahn.
Our story begins on a cloudy day in the fall of 1980 in the city of Saratoga Springs, New York. It was chilly that morning, so 22-year-old Sheila Shepherd would have needed a coat or sweater on the one-block walk from her apartment on Church Street to Worldwide Enterprises Vocational School, where she was taking secretarial courses. As the students from her class settled into their seats, the instructor noticed that Sheila was absent. Reports say that Sheila was a reliable student who was also paid to do office work at the school. She hadn't called in to let anyone know that she wouldn't be there that day, and it was odd enough that a teacher sent a couple students to Sheila's apartment to check on her. When they arrive, they can hear a radio playing inside, but Sheila doesn't answer repeated knocks at her locked door. The next day, Tuesday, 2 days before Thanksgiving, Sheila's absent from class again. This time, the teacher calls her family. They know it's uncharacteristic for Sheila to miss her courses, and they've also been trying to reach her. In fact, her Aunt Terry and Uncle Chuck had stopped by her apartment that weekend, but Sheila didn't answer. Here's Sheila's aunt, Terry Boisseau.
So I stopped up there, and knocked, and the door was locked, but her radio was on. And I came back down, and I was going to send Chuck up the fire escape then and told myself, no, you're just being paranoid. Now, come on, nothing's wrong with her. And I said to him, I know she's paying her electric, and she wouldn't leave the radio on. I just thought that was kind of odd. And we went home.
Terry told us that Sheila's mom, Marcia, had also been by the apartment.
And she went up, and the same thing, the radio was on. And she thought it was a little strange, too, and then they went home.
So when the school called Marcia, she became very concerned.
Marcia came over to my house and said that the school had called her and said Sheila hadn't been in school Monday and Tuesday. So she said, I'm going to go over. Do you want to go with me? And I said, yes. And at the last minute, Chuck said, wait a minute. Let me go with you.
Saratoga Springs Police Sergeant Christopher Callahan said it was around 10 a.m. on Tuesday, November 25th, when Sheila's mother, her Aunt Terry, and Uncle Chuck arrive outside Sheila's second-floor apartment.
When they go to the door and it's locked, they send the uncle around to the fire escape. He's the one who goes in. He opens the window, finds her, apparently obviously deceased.
Here's Sheila's Aunt Terry.
So he went up the fire escape. He had to climb over her.
Sheila's uncle finds her on the bed, covered with a green blanket, with her right leg exposed. He rushes to the front door, which is deadbolted from the inside.
So he came out the door, and we were starting up the stairs, and he put his arms out, and he said, you can't go in there.
The distraught family bangs on a neighbor's door, who then calls police, and they wait outside in shock. The call comes through dispatch as an unattended death, but when the first officer arrives on scene, he quickly realizes they've got a homicide on their hands. The scene is soon busy with more officers and detectives arriving.
You know, all hell broke loose. The cops, the news channels, the ambulance. I mean, it was just horrible.
The investigation begins. Sergeant Callahan describes what detectives found inside Sheila's apartment.
And the way the apartment is described at the time and from the crime scene photos, you know, like no sign of a struggle. It almost, if you didn't know better, if you didn't see the knife, you'd probably think that she just died in her sleep. So she was 22 at the time she was killed and is found in her bed, nude, tied, like a spread eagle position to her bed frame with a steak knife sticking out of her abdomen. And by steak knife, it's like an everyday, like not an overly big knife, not overly sharp, just a normal household, I say like kitchen knife for your everyday use.
A sash from a blouse was stuffed down into her mouth. Her wrists and ankles were tied to her bed frame using two shoelaces, a belt from a robe, and a length of fabric, possibly another belt from a piece of clothing. Police believe these items were from Sheila's own apartment. Now, getting back to the knife, police said the pathologist determined that Sheila was stabbed after she died, a half hour after she died.
You know, a half an hour later, it's not like where somebody is stabbed so many times in an attack where it's obvious they were mad at the person or it's a crime of passion. It's one single stab wound appears to pretty obviously to be post-mortem. The only blood is like the drop of blood from when it permeates the skin.
Aside from the knife protruding from Sheila's stomach, there was another curious finding during the autopsy. It was something on her cheek.
It was kind of a point of contention at the time between the investigators. It looked to be a bite mark on her cheek. Pathologist at the time said he thought that it was insect activity on her face. So that obviously is kind of odd.
Sergeant Callahan told us that the insect in question was thought to be a cockroach. There's also a conflicting report stating that the mark could have been made from human teeth, but more so from the victim's head striking someone else's top teeth, not a full bite. An impression was made of the mark. According to the autopsy report, Sheila's cause of death is asphyxiation due to the tie from the blouse that was forced in her mouth, a blouse she had borrowed from a friend. The pathologist puts the official time of death somewhere between 1 a.m. and 8 a.m. Sunday morning, November 23rd. A rape kit was also part of the post-mortem exam, and there was no sign of a sexual assault.
The pathologist at the time didn't think that there was any... He said there were no signs of any sexual activity, that sex had not occurred pre- or post-mortem.
Police said she also had no obvious defensive wounds, but she did have a broken fingernail. Could this be significant?
It's just one nail, and it's to the point where it's not like a break where you would walk around and kind of deal with it. It's like almost half the nail is broken.
We asked Sergeant Callahan about the restraints that bound her hands and feet and when they were used.
She looks like somebody that would have the strength if she really wanted to fight against these things, especially the shoelaces. They're on a metal, like one of those adjustable frames for a bed. So it seems like almost just pulling back and forth against it that she probably could have severed that tie. Again, I'm speculating, but it seems like if she wanted out of those ones anyway, she probably could have.
So was she tied up after her death? Or could there be something else interfering with her ability to fight off an attacker or remove those restraints? The only thing found in her stomach was a piece of bubble gum, and according to the autopsy, her blood alcohol level was 0.25%. At that level, she would have been very intoxicated, to the point of some brain impairment causing confusion and disorientation. Her motor skills would have been affected, and she may have needed help standing or walking, or she could have completely passed out. What we don't know is whether her intoxication was voluntary or was it a device used by the killer to gain control. Police described Sheila's tiny apartment as somewhat disorganized, which according to family was not that unusual. But the apartment was not in such a state of disarray that it would have indicated a violent attack. But police did find something that seemed eerily neat in comparison.
The killer took the time to, he put these, the two shoes of hers that he had taken the laces from to use as ligatures, they're placed together, you know, kind of very neatly in like a dress right dress fashion.
The dress right dress reference from Sergeant Callahan refers to a military line formation. In this case, the victim's shoes are displayed parallel to each other, toes pointed forward.
It's very obviously staged. That was looked into, the way that she staged was looked into of, is this a cult type thing, or is this to throw the police off to think that it's a cult type thing?
So the crime scene is speaking to detectives, the way that Sheila's body's displayed. the knife in her abdomen, and the positioning of her sneakers. These things, presumably done after she was killed, would have taken some time. But what does it mean?
They're doing who knows what during all this time in this apartment, but no real sense of urgency, you know, no real concern that they're going to be found or caught in there.
To protect the investigation, police aren't saying what else they found at the scene, but they're hopeful that the evidence they do have can help them in identifying the killer. So again, we know the killer spent some time there, but how do they get inside? Here's Sergeant Callahan.
Could this have been somebody laying in wait inside the apartment for her? We think pretty obvious that it was somebody that was known to her, because the amount of time that they would have spent in this apartment, you know, after this murder takes place, they're kind of setting the scene, they're organizing the sneakers. There's only one door into the apartment that's deadbolted from the inside. Kind of gives the impression that it was, you know, somebody who was known to her, familiar with the apartment, familiar with the layout.
Police learned that Sheila routinely left the window above her bed unlocked, the one next to the fire escape, just in case her brother stopped by when she wasn't at home. So the killer could have gained access through that window. And as Sergeant Callahan said, they waited inside the apartment for Sheila to return. Or they could have been waiting somewhere nearby and then followed her inside. Or the killer could have been someone already known to Sheila, and maybe they accompanied her back to the apartment that Saturday night. Of course, these are all just theories. Police say it's unclear how the killer actually came to be inside her apartment. They're also not 100% sure how the killer left the apartment. There's only two ways in or out: the front door, which was deadbolted from the inside, or the fire escape. Sergeant Callahan describes the fire escape theory.
So the killer actually leaves out a fire escape, which is right over the bed, and her bed is right at the base of this window. So somebody actually had to climb over her to leave the scene. So the killer steps over, goes out this window onto a fire escape, and then down, presumably Church Street or Van Damme Street behind it.
If the killer left through the front door, they would have needed a key. Strangely, Sheila's keys were not found inside her apartment, but we'll come back to that later. Let's get back to the investigation. To really drill down on any potential persons of interest, authorities needed to find out who Sheila was. Here's Aunt Terry.
She was a beautiful, beautiful woman. She didn't even know how pretty she was. She was about 5'7". She had blonde, very, very curly hair. She had green eyes. Very, very, very beautiful, striking girl.
Detectives investigating the case in the 1980s interviewed family members of both Sheila and her estranged husband, Richard, trying to get a handle on Sheila's life, her relationships, anything that might help the investigation. They found that Sheila had an active social life, that she was motivated and well-liked. She wanted to make a better life for herself and her daughter.
Because she was going to the worldwide school to accomplish that, wanted to start a career in something.
Sergeant Callahan.
From this area originally, or from Saratoga Springs originally, had married a guy who was in the service. They had been living out in California together, where he's stationed with the Army. She separates from him out there. Once they separate, she goes to Colorado, stays with her aunt and uncle out there for, I think, a couple of months that she's out visiting, staying with them.
Again, Sheila's Aunt Terry.
We were at my house, and her parents called and said, why don't you come home for a visit? So she came home for a visit and ended up staying.
Now back in her hometown of Saratoga Springs, Sheila moves into her little apartment on Church Street, which was a subdivided Victorian home with multiple units.
When the husband is discharged or finishes his tour of duty out there, he comes back to New York, but he is out on Long Island in a town called Orient.
Before her murder, Sheila's estranged husband, Richard, visited her in Saratoga to talk about their future and about their 3-year-old daughter.
They had decided they were not going to reconcile. They were going to split.
Sheila and Richard's daughter was staying with Richard's parents, who lived about 5 miles away from Saratoga Springs in the town of Greenfield.
And she was doing that and willingly had left her daughter with her in-laws so that she could get her life on track to become, you know, somebody that could raise the daughter. And sounds like she had kind of made admissions at the time of like, I'm not really in a great spot in my life to take custody of the daughter.
So Sheila was trying to get her life back on track and get a good job. She didn't have a car, but her new apartment was within walking distance of her school, a grocery store, and the main downtown area. She'd only been living there since August, but she liked her apartment and her classes, and she'd been enjoying the social scene that downtown Saratoga Springs had to offer.
Yes, she was social. She was shy, though. She was pretty laid-back person, but, you know, she'd have a few cocktails, and then she'd want to go out and see what was going on out there.
Sergeant Callahan said that there were several bars she was known to frequent. The Hub, Sages, Casa 13, and the Tin and Lint. On the Saturday night she was last seen, she was believed to have been at Sages and possibly the Tin and Lint. Here's Terry.
Callahan and I have different versions of this, but I heard that she went by the Hub and Saturday Night Live was on, and she was alone, and then she left there and walked the rest of the way to her apartment.
Investigators interviewed people who were part of Sheila's social life, trying to piece together a timeline of her last movements.
But the people that were interviewed at the time, most of them are part of a bar-going crowd, you know, where the investigators interviewed bartenders, other bar patrons. They say, when did you last see her? And they say, oh, it was Saturday night at whatever time. And then they press them or they ask them, like, are you sure? Like, well, no, it could have been Friday night. Or I say 2 a.m, it could have been midnight. So after that, everything is kind of speculation.
It was Sheila's mother who was the last verified person to see Sheila near the family home on Hamilton Street on Saturday afternoon. There was also an unconfirmed sighting of her at the Grand Union Supermarket on Railroad Ave around 8 p.m. that same Saturday, presumably hours before she'd be killed.
We wish we knew who she was last with for sure. There are reports of people who live on Church Street. They saw her walking past at some point, like heading towards downtown, the Bar District area. She is down in our downtown district. Saratoga has about a 2-3 block span. It's got maybe 15 bars in there, you know, very active nightlife bar scene. She was pretty regular down there. I think she only lived maybe a half mile, if that far, to the apartment. She's definitely seen out that weekend, but being able to lock somebody in to it was this time on Saturday night versus was it Friday night, you know, people have not been able to say for sure. There were also reports she's walking with a man wearing a leather jacket, you know, muscular type, stocky, but he was never able to be positively identified either.
A witness thought that the man was black, but could not be sure. And the time of the observation was around 8 p.m. on Saturday night. Back in 1980, when detectives began speaking with neighbors and other potential witnesses, the lapse in time from when Sheila had been out on Saturday night to when her body was found the following Tuesday made it difficult for people to put an exact date or time to their observations. One of those witnesses that police spoke to was a neighbor who lived in the same apartment building as Sheila. Here's Sergeant Callahan.
There's another apartment inside of her house that thinks that she had like a small party gathering in the apartment. They think it was Saturday night. It didn't sound like that was all with 100% certainty, but they thought they heard at least 2 to 3 voices speaking, you know, inside the apartment that would have been at some point on Saturday night. And they report hearing a radio playing from within the apartment. We're never able to find out who was at that gathering. You know, no one came forward to say, I was there that Saturday night, that obviously would be great, because we would think they would be some of the last people to have seen her alive, to have been with her.
Terry told us she spoke with one of Sheila's neighbors who thought that she heard Sheila come home Saturday night.
And when she walked in the door, the girl downstairs said she heard a thud and, you know, some activity going on, but nothing, you know, no violence or anything, or yelling or anything like that.
The radio that was heard by the neighbor on Saturday night was also heard by Sheila's aunt and her mom over the weekend, and by the students who knock at Sheila's door on Monday when she's a no-show at school. And it's still playing when her uncle discovers her body on Tuesday. According to police, there were no suspects or persons of interest in the murder of Sheila Shepherd. They did say that an estranged husband would certainly be a focal point in the first stages of an investigation. We asked if child custody could have been a motive.
The husband seems like, even after Sheila dies, that he's not looking to be that person either, because for all intents and purposes, she was raised by her grandparents, being Richard's parents.
If Sheila's estranged husband, Richard, also known as Shep, did have a motive, Terry thinks it had more to do with Sheila than with their daughter.
He left her off at his mother's. I don't think that would indicate to me that he didn't really want her. I think he thought if he got that he'd get Sheila back.
Terry told us about the last time she saw Shep.
He came to my house before the funeral, and he stayed for a couple of minutes and said, "I'll see you at the funeral home." So we went to the funeral home, you know, because it was important for us to see her, especially Chuck, from what he had encountered when he went in the apartment. And Shep came in, and he looked at Sheila, and he just said, "I didn't think it'd be like this." My mother had her hand on his back, and he had on just a corduroy, like, sport coat, and she said it was soaking wet. He said he was going to go get some flowers, and he never came back.
Here's Sergeant Callahan.
And he's, I wouldn't say excluded 100% pretty quickly, but he was given a pretty hard look, but had pretty solid alibi of being out in Orient at this time that this occurred, which is, I think, to drive from here, like six-seven hours.
So who would want to kill Sheila Shepherd? We know she was separated and she'd been socializing downtown and maybe dating on a casual level, but she was not known to be dating one exclusively at the time of her death.
Possibility was raised at the time. Could the killer have been a woman?
Could someone have been jealous of Sheila? Could someone have been stalking her? There's many possibilities. Investigators request a suspect profile from the FBI. The report indicates the suspect is most likely a white male who may have had prior military service. Police told us there's also a Navy base in Saratoga Springs, a nuclear sub training site. Could the knots used in Sheila's binding provide a clue? Police asked the Navy.
They said, "No, these aren't like a naval knot. They're nautical knot, rather. They're just a basic, like a double overhand, like everyone learns how to tie their shoes."
We asked if anything was taken from Sheila's apartment. Terry said that she dropped off a trunk at Sheila's place the Wednesday before her murder.
I had a trunk of hers, and, you know, it had some of her clothes in it and all that, but it had her pictures in it, and she was very proud to show the pictures of the baby. And we put the trunk, it was like this little alcove in there. So we went up there, and she wasn't there, and we left the trunk in that little alcove. And the only thing that was missing from the apartment were those pictures.
Here's Sergeant Callahan.
There's not a definite, like, agreement on it. There was a series of photos that were left for her by her aunt. Some members of the family thought were missing, or I believe still think are missing to this day. But there was a large number of them that were in evidence when we got the case. I'm not positive if they, you know, if they were the same ones that were believed to have been stolen from the scene, but it definitely wasn't like a ransacked, you know, anything of value taken.
Sergeant Callahan told us it was believed that a set of keys were missing from Sheila's apartment at the time of her murder in November.
The keys were found, I believe, like early spring, which here would be like March, April, in a snowbank once it had melted across the street from the apartment. Did she drop the keys going home and then they were found later? Did somebody take them and discard them? But they discard them right, you know, across from the scene of the crime. That's speculation as well, but they were missing at the time. And then later, like I said, turned up once the snow melted in the spring.
We don't know if those keys were ever tried in the deadbolt of Sheila's front door. They were identified as belonging to her by the unique Mugger Slugger keychain that she always carried. There were some news reports suggesting that Sheila may have been the victim of serial killer Joseph Nasso, convicted in the strangulation deaths of four women in Northern California, and also known as the Alphabet Killer. His crimes ranging from 1977 to 1994. His victims had alliterative names, Roxine Rogash, Carmen Colon, Pamela Parsons, and Tracy Tafoya. Could he have targeted Sheila Shepherd? Detectives checked it out, but found nothing linking Nasso to Sheila's murder. There's also online speculation about a connection to another unsolved murder of a woman from the area. The bludgeoned body of 28-year-old Pamela DeVizio was found outside of Saratoga Springs in July 1988, 8 years after Sheila's murder. According to the Saratoga County Sheriff's Office, DeVizio lived in Saratoga Springs. She was last seen in the bar district on Caroline Street.
Last seen walking from the bar, body is found out in kind of a suburb of Saratoga. It's more of a rural, almost like farmland area. Her death, her murder scene was very violent. Looks like probably from a blunt force instrument that was used to kill her. So we did sit down with our sheriff's department is the one who has that case because it occurred outside of the city where she's found and the murder scene is outside of the city. We did sit down with their cold case detective who had that case, compare notes, compare case files. And other than the fact that they're both young, you know, young women and last seen in the downtown area, that's about where the similarities end.
The Sheila Shepherd homicide is one of the coldest cases at Saratoga Springs PD. We spoke with investigator Matthew Wilson, who told us that a case like this, one that's more than four decades old, brings its own challenges.
And time is kind of the enemy in one of these things. It just keeps going and going. And, you know, some of these businesses and bars and whatnot are no longer there. A lot of these places are gone. Things move and progress and change. That's kind of a small hurdle.
But, says investigator Wilson, there are a couple of things that have not changed. Among them, Sheila's apartment.
The building itself on the outside looks pretty much the same. Fire escape on the side is still there. So everything in that area is almost exactly the same. It's more of a residential area, so not much has changed in that little strip of street there. And you kind of get a kind of a perspective of distance. She's not driving, she's walking downtown. You've got an idea how long a walk it is from, you know, there to the downtown area where the restaurants and bars are. And you know exactly where, you know, the school that she was attending is no longer there, but you have an idea from how far away that building is from her apartment. So you kind of get an idea, perspective-wise, how long it takes to walk from there to school or walk from her apartment to Broadway. You kind of get a general idea where everything is.
Sheila's daughter was too young to remember much about her mother, but she's lived with a loss and the thoughts of what might have been. She shared those thoughts with us in an email, which we'll read for you here.
Having lost my mom so early on had a devastating impact on my life. There isn't a day that goes by where I don't think about the potential relationship I was deprived of and the future I could have had with her.
Sheila was laid to rest near her family home. But something strange occurred at the cemetery after her funeral.
It seemed like every time we would put some flowers in there, we'd go back and they'd be gone. Could the killer have been stealing them? I don't really see why. I don't know.
It was never discovered who was responsible or if it had any connection to Sheila's murder. Saratoga Springs police are hoping that after all these years, someone will come forward with information that will help to solve the case and give the family peace.
I find it hard to believe that somebody did this and never said anything to anyone. I can understand somebody who does have that information not wanted to come forward at the time for whatever their reasons may be. I'd love to be able to call her father, you know, call her daughter and say with any degree of certainty, this is who killed your mother, who killed your daughter. If there is somebody out there, somebody literally got away with a murder, we're going to have a tip line set up for this and an email. If there's someone who wants to send tips in anonymously, we'll take that. We'll take whatever help we can get at this point.
Sheila's daughter also hopes for an answer to the question that has lingered in her mind for more than 40 years. Here's more from her email to us.
Finding a resolution to this case would not only provide solace to myself, but bring forth justice for my mom and hopefully bring retribution to whoever is responsible for this.
Terry was very close to Sheila, and they shared a very special bond. Revisiting this case is still difficult for her, but Terry says that she does it for Sheila's daughter. She feels it's important to keep Sheila's case in the public eye. They want an answer.
I mean, I don't think you get closure in murder, but yes, it would give us justice.
The family of Sheila Shepherd recently announced a $50,000 reward for information leading to an arrest. You can find details of the reward on the Saratoga Springs Police Facebook page or in our show notes for this episode, along with photos and blog at apbcoldcase.com. If you have any information about the murder of Sheila Shepherd just before Thanksgiving of 1980, call the Saratoga Springs Police Department tip line at 518-584-8477 or send an email to tips@saratogapolice.org.
Thanks for listening to APB Cold Case. Tell us about your cold case at apbcoldcase@spawngroup.com. APB Cold Case is an original Spawn Group production.